Good afternoon, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is October 7th, 2014. It's Tuesday afternoon, and as you know, it's my regularly scheduled radio show from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But I happen to be recording out of South Africa today, and I have a very special guest with me, not only my lovely friends, Sandy and Chris Wilkins, but my other new friends, Lo and Rosie Center. And what I would like to do is give you a little bit more background on perhaps the Zimbabwe ruins, some of the things that have been coming about in our lives. We've been getting messages in the last several days rampantly. And also just to give you a better perspective of what is really truly going on the other side of the world for all of you that don't reside in Africa, just to kind of bust some of the fear porn that's going on out there and the Ebola scares and the perceptions that we have of other people's civilizations and cultures. Since I've been here, it's been fairly amazing and mind-blowing to find out some of the things that are really truly happening. So with that, I would like to introduce Lo Center, because that would be the very wise man that I've met who has somewhat greatly impacted me. I know that I know you from a long, long time ago, that is for sure. And so I want you, Lo, to give everyone just an idea of where you feel you live. We met originally regarding the ancient ones. We were just starting to talk about the ancient ones, and I thought maybe you could give a little bit of background on how you came here and where you live and so on.
Good afternoon, everybody, especially the listeners now in USFA. We're speaking here now from the other of SA, in Southern Africa. I think what Alexandra is getting at is to get some more background on me as a person. I was born in Potchefstroom, in the Eastern Transvaal, or the Eastern section of the Republic of South Africa. I moved down to the Eastern Cape, or the border area of Southern Africa between the old Cape Colony and the Transkei, where Nelson Mandela and the other subsequent presidents and hierarchy of the ANC came from. My first contact with the olden ones was when I was 5 years old. I had to open a gate on a farm, and I was struck with a shiny light. And I think that is where the implant was done on me. The first implant was done on me.
Excellent. Of course, benevolent.
I presume it's benevolent and not malevolent. Because I'm still alive. If it was malevolent, I wouldn't be telling the story.
No, this is true. And you're basically protecting a very sacred ground.
That is so. We find that from the olden ones, there is a group of olden warriors protecting my setup here now, where I reside at the moment, in the northern part of Southern Africa, near the Zimbabwean border. And I feel that with the knowledge and perspectives that comes up now and again, and the OBE or out-of-body experiences that a person has had, and also the near-death experiences, where it was told that I was part of the Olden Ones. They say I couldn't die that stage, because I still had to perform duties. What they are, I don't know. I presume that I will perform those duties automatically.
And just to add to that, I know that that is part of your path by just meeting you and feeling your essence. I mean, you know, as my girlfriend Laura would say, you're an old wise owl. But you're even beyond that. There's an ancient kind of feeling around you, and the amount of knowledge and wisdom that you have is very penetrating for those that are around you. So continue on as you started delving into a lot of the ancient wisdom and the conspiracy information and what was really going on the planet. When did that start for you?
It started in the early 50s, or should I say in the 1950s, it's not 2050. And when I started delving information and so on, because I couldn't get answers on questions that I put. Eventually, I through the OBE, I met up with an old wise man that told me that I needn't worry. The information and the enlightenment will come automatically. That's where I've discovered that I can see orbs, can also see auras on people. That's one of the things that I found with Alexandra, that we don't only know each other in this life, but in the far distant past.
Oh, yeah.
We've met. I don't know whether she was one of my girlfriends then. We'll have to find out in future. But it's a very interesting subject and so on, to try and find answers to questions that the general public or general scientists cannot give a person.
I totally agree. Now, you mentioned the out-of-body experience. Can you tell us a little more about that?
The first out-of-body experience I had was when I was just 16 years of age. And I was lying on my bed, slowly floated away from my body, and then I hit the ceiling. I turned around and saw myself on the bed having no knowledge of OBE, I was scared that silver thread that binds you to your body would break. But it seemed to be a scare that was never to be realized.
Mm. So how long do you feel like you were actually out of your body?
I didn't feel actually being out of my body. I knew I was out of my body. I could see the watches and the situation around the house and around the suburb where we used to stay. And it must have been an out of body experience of about an hour and a half.
Wow. And very cool.
And the main thing is that I've been in the house on my bed physically, but my astral body was out of my physical body, and floating around the suburb and so on. I could see and determine who was doing what. But they don't have to worry about it. I won't give secrets away.
So what did you feel was the upshot of the major message from that experience? I mean, a lot of people say that when you have an out-of-body experience, it is a jump in consciousness. Did you feel that you experienced that as well?
At that stage, no. It was just a physical separation between body and soul.
Very interesting.
What my brother afterwards told me is that my metabolism slowed down completely in my physical body, so that the energy was available for my astral body to float around and to move around with.
Very interesting. So that was when you were 16.
That's the first time I
So
I
you
did
had
a
another one?
Several.
Oh my God, how many have you had?
Out of body experiences in total must have been about 120.
Oh my God. And you actually kept track of all those?
You tend to remember the situations and the times and experiences that you've had, because it may make such an impact on a person's soul and on a person's memory.
Definitely. So which one was the most impacting? Which experience?
The most impacted one was near-death experience. I've had only one of those.
We're happy to hear that.
You know, so that I can still discuss the situation with you. Yes. I had a stent or an heart attack or an angina, I don't know what you call it, but I went into for an...
triple bypass, right?
Yeah, not the whole operation, but to have stents fitted.
A stent for your heart, okay.
And they started hurting me because they don't give you anesthetics and so on.
They
forced myself to go out of my body. And then all of a sudden I found that I was out of my body. I was on the way to say goodbye to the physical world and so on. Somebody or some force stopped me and told me to go back. It's not my time yet. There's still things that I have to do. They didn't explain, or the voice didn't explain what it was. So I assume I will automatically do what I need to do.
Did you recognize this being that was guiding you to return back?
I felt that it was the divine creator.
Wow.
I didn't, actually nobody told me or anything told me that. It's just that the feeling that I received. I would take the time that elapsed must have been about half an hour.
Amazing.
When I came out of experience and also out of the back into my own body after the out of body experience, that the whole stent fitting and so on situation was past, and I was back in ICU.
That's fantastic. Did you actually intend to go into an out of body experience because of the lack of pain killing? You know, did you actually say to yourself, oh my God, this could be pretty painful, so I think I'll use my ability to astral travel?
It is so. They started hurting me because as the people who has the, forget the English word now, but in any case, they entered the catheter in your...
the catheter, yes.
Yeah, in your veins.
Correct.
Started hurting me. To get rid of the pain and so on, I forced myself out of my body.
That's fantastic. Did you teach yourself how to do this? You know, there's people all over the world that would love to know how to astral travel.
I didn't actually teach myself. It's a thing that came naturally.
Naturally to you.
And because if the situation warrants it, and especially in a case of pain or in a case of you don't want to disturb anybody else and so on, then you just float out of your body and get into your astral body, making sure that the silver cord and so on is not tangled and so on.
Not disconnected.
Yeah.
So were there any commonalities as far as a pattern within all your OBEs? I mean, is there something that you could generalize for the audience as far as, you know, what did you ultimately come away with in your perspective of the universe?
Well, to start off, to get out of your body and so on, you must have a complete relaxed situation. And then you can work yourself up slowly into the mode of leaving your body, because at first it can be a scary situation. But afterwards, when you know that you are still connected by the thread to your physical body, and it's not scary anymore. And what I found is that in my astral travels, or not travels, but in my astral body, that I can escape time.
Mm.
And if you move back in time, I haven't tried to move into the future because I don't want to know what the future holds.
Yeah.
Keep it as a surprise for myself as well.
Right. Have you ever embedded yourself in a past timeline and been able to make changes or make contact with, you know, for example, Rosie, your wife? Were you able to go back to when you guys were young and contact her at that time?
No, I never tried that.
Well, there you go. There's something for you to try.
I will. What I found is that in the astral plane, I can get or receive warnings of happenings that is detrimental to me or my family. Can warn me beforehand.
Fantastic.
To take defensive steps and or recommendations to improve the situation that we're entering in.
Very good.
As an example, my kids were in boarding school at that stage, and about 260 kilometers from us where we're staying now. And we dropped them at the boarding school, and we were returning home, and it was about half past 8 at night. And in Africa, the darkness and night falls quicker than in the rest of the world.
I noticed that too.
Yeah. And I just received an astral warning to stop immediately with my vehicle. When I stopped, it was amongst a bunch of kudu. Kudu is a South African antelope, just smaller than eland.
Lovely.
Eland being the biggest antelope in the world.
Okay.
And if I didn't listen to the voice and the warnings and so on, I would have had a terrible accident.
Oh, my. That's fantastic. So are you in touch with them on a regular basis? I mean, do you communicate with the ancient ones regularly?
No.
No.
I communicate with them when they want me to communicate.
When they want to.
When they want to, yes.
And how do you see them? How do you see the ancient ones?
As I physically, looking at you, I see them like that.
Okay.
As beings and so on. And they've got strange dresses or apparel on sometimes. Sometimes robes, sometimes tight-fitting artificial clothing that looks like a second skin.
Interesting.
And
do they shapeshift?
I haven't met anybody shapeshifting, no.
Okay.
The only ones that I've seen, it was on TV. Some of the guys in various places, I won't mention names and so on. You can see the guy is shapeshifting on the stage.
Well, so I think the most fascinating part for me was hearing about how you were guided to this farm. And once you got here, what you found out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was my dream to have my own farm, because after my dad left the family farm, we went and worked for various companies and so on. And eventually I dreamt of having my own farm. And just one day I sat paging through the local rag or newspaper, as we call it.
Yes.
And there was an advert of several small farms. And all of a sudden, I just felt I had to draw a ring around this one advertisement. And about half an hour after I've ringed that advertisement, my wife phoned me and says, there's a farm available, and the kids being independent and so on, we could go and see it and talk about it. So I told her, don't you worry, I've even drawn a sketch of your house on the farm. So eventually we decided to buy the farm, and that's where we are at now.
Yeah, you know, Rosie told me a very fascinating story about how she literally was drawn right to this farm, how it was just very synchronistically opening up a lot of opportunities to come to this farm, right, Rosie?
I never looked at any advertisements of farms or houses, but on this special day, it was if somebody took me by the shoulder and said, look. And immediately when I looked, I thought, I'd found my husband. And he said, yeah, I've been drawing the outlines of the house. Get the agent to take us. And when we got here, there were a couple of plots, small farms, for sale. And this special farm, when I saw it, I said, I want this one. Not that, or that, or that. This one.
You knew.
It's just that somebody guided me and told me, that's for you.
Very cool. Very cool. And do you both feel extremely protected on this property?
Yeah, I feel no fear. I feel that I'm actually guided, or, you know, that I do have a God over us.
Yeah.
And I don't have to fear anything. You know, even small little thefts from the people, they are minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any big, say, thefts, or that they even try to steal or do any harm us in any way.
And I think you both also mentioned that this property is so guarded that they're almost afraid to. Didn't you say something like that?
Laborers. They came to us and said, we won't bother you. These big white people that's guarding over the house.
So they see the big white people. Isn't that fascinating?
In actual fact, there's a big white entities.
Yeah.
Over 12 feet tall. I've seen them once, and they are protecting the property and the area. So there's no hassle and so on there at all.
Well, so I kind of want to add my two cents. I mean, I didn't know anything about this property. I just knew that you guys were very cool people because Chris and Sandy had said, you know, you really need to meet this man. He's very wise, and I have such a connection with him. And so I said, well, you know, let's do it. And then he mentioned something about how he thought you might have seen these tall white beings. And I said, oh, we got to go down there. There's something about it. I got to get down there. And when I was walking your property, I was blown away by the, it's not a vortex, it's a doorway. I mean, it's truly one of the most, probably one of the strongest portals I've been around in a long time. I mean, I just love coming here just so I can go stand on it. But I was going to ask you, could you tell us a little bit about what you found out about this property?
I eventually, when we bought the property, I saw there was four land claims on the property. But the Elden people, they told me that I didn't worry about that, because that won't be to my disadvantage. And that because of the portal that is here, we have to keep the property as one. We can't subdivide it or sell it off again and so on. We have to keep it in the family.
Yeah. And then what about, you were talking today about the horseshoe.
Yeah. What we did when we, because it was undeveloped, the whole, call it, I think the American people to better understand, it's like a homestead.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think the American homestead is something like about 150 acres.
It depends on the state.
Depends on the state and depends on the area and legislation. This is more or less the same. And but it was completely undeveloped, stone bush the whole place through.
Uh-huh.
And I started, we were walking with my divining rods to try and locate water. Eventually, I located the water, and we got a guy operating a drill to drill us a well, and he used his magnometer to trace water also. Where he decided that the strongest available water that we can drill for was only about 6 inches away from where I found the ideal spot. And then he showed me on his map as he walked the property to find the best place to drill, and so on, that the whole area underneath the property was in the form, or the subterranean water was in the form of a horseshoe, a sort of a subterranean lake. We drilled there and we found good water.
Now tell them how many gallons per minute it was when they originally found it.
No, we don't count it as gallons per minute, it's gallons
okay.
per hour.
Per hour, okay.
If we, the test pump that we put in there, we pumped it for 24 hours, gave us 12,000 gallons an hour. And but we decided not to put stress on the supply, and we only utilized it at about 4 or 5 thousand gallons an hour.
That's amazing. I mean, in California, you're doing really well if you've got 300. So that just gives you a perspective of what you're sitting on. That's amazing. Rosie, you wanted to say something?
But the most amazing thing of it is, Alexandra, is with the first boil, we struck that water.
Mm.
And my son has tried to bore a couple of holes, and he didn't get the amount of water that we got there.
So you went right smack
to the first
place you needed to go.
Yeah.
Into the heart of the water supply.
As if somebody wanted us to have.
And they guided you there. So again, a borehole is what we would call a well in the United States. And so once you successfully did that, I noticed that, you know, you took us today for a drive through all of your different farming areas. And can you give us just a synopsis of the different types of animals that you see here on a fairly regular basis?
Well, Alexandra, let me put it this way. At first, we didn't worry much about game and animals and so on. We concentrated on vegetables and fruit trees.
Mm.
And the potential is quite high because for jalapenos, that is a type of chili
mm-hmm.
produced on a question of 2.5 or 5 acres. We produce something like 30 tons of peppers per season.
Wow.
Or else if we put in tomatoes, we produce something like 60 tons per hectare tomatoes, but the amount of labor and so on is intensive. That's why we decided to stop farming with veg and fruit and brought in animals, exotic game animals. And at the moment we have eland, that's had a few of them, and we've got some nyalas. That is one of the animals, most beautiful animals to me in Africa. And we also have black springbuck, normal springbuck, impala, normal impala, black impala, and...
the monkeys?
Vervet monkeys, of course, thousands of them.
Well, you say of course. I mean, when I came out here, that was like the highlight of my day. You know?
That was
highlight of my day.
That was also one of the reasons why we stopped farming was veg. They reap as much as we did.
I hear they're very cunning.
They're very cunning and clever and very resourceful.
Interesting.
But not having fruit and veg anymore, so we haven't got problems with them. We can enjoy them as well as being on the property. And we have got bushbuck and duikers. They call it a duiker in English or in Afrikaans. And we've got an earthen dam, roughly about 280 meters long, 7 meters deep. We've got various types of fish in there. So it's an ideal place to live.
Yeah, just the life here is truly inspirational. I mean, if you were an artist or a writer or someone who really needed their time and space to really connect with the planet, this is one place I would definitely...
It would be ideal, yeah.
Yeah, it's so ideal here. So as far as you've landed on the farm, obviously you had how many children?
We've got 3 children.
Right.
And their wives and grandchildren and
great-grandchildren.
Yeah, 3 children and grandchildren. We have got 10.
Wow.
And we've got now 2 great-grandchildren.
So at this stage of your life, are you delving more into, you know, some of the truth-seeking that maybe you didn't have time before? I mean, have you really been getting involved in that part of things?
We have been involved in it, even though we did work or work the lands and so on, we still had time to be to chase knowledge. And I think the American people would call it a laid-back situation,
mm-hmm.
where we can take our time and do their studies and follow-ups and experiments and so on that we find necessary to expand our horizons. Because the saying goes is you have to look at everything and retain the good.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. That's very true. And I find it very interesting to speak with you because you are very well read and you have quite a bit of knowledge in a lot of different areas. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is how do you feel that the South Africans perceive, say, the United States? I know. Go for it.
You want the truth.
I want the truth. We all want the truth.
Years ago, I can't remember the actor's name. I think it was Gregory Peck.
Mm.
Made a film called The Ugly American.
Yeah.
And... the general American that we've met and that we've spoken to, and we find it's very, very much like us. Not a big difference. The big difference lies in the governments.
Great.
I think the governments in America is forcing upon the Americans ideas and stuff that the people don't want. But they've sold out the constitution. For progress.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the world is kind of wondering what's happening with the United States, that we're not taking a more active role? You mentioned something about that the other night when I saw you.
Yeah, the main thing is, the thing is that I was wondering is how can the people of America itself allow them to be led by the noses as they're being led now? Firstly, monetary-wise. Secondly, fighting in other countries has got nothing to do with them. Because this fighting against terrorism and so on is just a scam.
Yeah.
It's an excuse to go to war that was not necessary. And the financial systems that they have, the Federal Reserve System, because it's a private system and a monetary policy being forced onto the Americans that they did not ask for, and that if they read their constitution well, shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, I agree. So I think a lot of people throughout the world do tend to watch what's happening with the United States and Obama. What is your opinion of what's going on with Obama and our government from a South African perspective?
Alexander, let me put it this way. We in South Africa can't really point fingers. We've got a similar government leaning on the people and not doing what the people want. you're in your country at this stage, I would think, are also being led to the slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Financially, socially, politically, they are forcing situations, forcing opinions and also doings on you, on the people, taxing them to death. Whereas if they didn't have the Federal Reserve, the government could have made their own money.
Absolutely.
And the cost of the money would have been only the paper and the salaries of the
Absolutely.
People who made it.
Right. Yeah, we've lost a couple presidents over that main issue.
I think a few of your presidents were killed because of that.
I agree. So you brought up your own government. Can you give us a little bit more information about what is going on politically within South Africa and anything else that you can tell us about the other provinces, I believe, is what you call them, within Africa as a continent? Maybe clarify for all of those out there. You mentioned today about how Africa is not the only province within Africa, but there are...
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
South Africa is a country on its own. It's a actual fact, a republic on its own. There is about 76 different countries, African countries in Africa.
That's an interesting number, isn't it?
I'm guessing now. I don't know the exact number.
Okay.
But the people overseas in Europe, and so in China and Russia and in America, both Americas, North and Southern America, tend to think of South Africa as Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. All the republics around the Republic of South Africa has got their own governments. And
it's just like Europe.
Just like Europe. And though not as stable.
Yeah.
As they are in Europe, although in Europe they are getting unstable as well now.
Yeah, sure.
The main thing is the governments tend to enrich themselves, the politicians, instead of doing the things that the people want and enriching the people. You can't uplift the poor by killing off the rich.
Right.
Then who will develop anything?
And is that what you feel has happened here?
That's what I feel has happened here. There are farm murders, all the country over. AgriForum has gone to the UN to fight for recognition and better treatment of the safety and security of the farmers. Because without the farmers, there are no food security in the country.
And this is a huge agricultural
country. It's climate. A huge agricultural country.
Yes.
If you take Zimbabwe as a case in point, they had something like 30,000 white farmers in Zim. There's not one anymore. And they're in a situation of famine. And
where did all of these farmers go?
Well, a lot of them were killed. Most of them came down to South Africa. But they lost everything in Zim. By Zim, I mean Zimbabwe.
And this was around what year?
They started in Zimbabwe around about the beginning of the 70s.
Okay.
And eventually, most of those farmers are working for bigger companies or businesses. So there is not utilization of their knowledge and their expertise that they can do. There was a group of them and South African farmers that went to the Congos. There's various Congos, there's three of them. And they lasted only 4 or 5 years, and then the interfighting and so on developed, and so the farmers had to get out. So the guys in those countries are losing food.
Mm.
For political purposes.
Wow. And you did mention that there were some liens put against this property, correct?
That is so.
And this is because of some sort of new legislation?
It is of a new legislation because they reckon the baseline is 1913, and any taken away properties was from that day onwards, that because of apartheid.
Mm.
And that is also a misnomer. Apartheid means separate development. And the bigger guys or politicians in Europe, America, and other places, they call it hate, H-A-T-E instead of H-E-I-D.
Mm.
The biggest propagator of apartheid or segregation is Britain.
Interesting.
They call it separate development, or they add laws and the communists, levels of differentiation in their countries. They started it in South Africa after the Anglo-Boer War. Now they want to point a finger at the Afrikaner.
Mm.
It is dumb.
Very much so. So is there still that very strong British influence on South Africa politically?
Politically, not so strong as before. But to give an example is our state president, President Zuma. He only has got a standard 5 or a form 8, the degree of education.
Oh, okay.
And whereas the previous people had doctor's degrees. And how can a guy that can't even do mathematics properly, how can he lead a country?
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal feeling.
Interesting. And is he promoting more peace between the blacks and the whites in South Africa, do you feel?
I don't think so. At rallies, he started singing, "Bring me my machine gun."
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Seriously. To give a case in point, one of our workers on Friday morning was attacked on the way to the farm. My hands were cut. She landed up in hospital. That happened this Friday past.
Oh my gosh. And the reason for that?
It's black on black. Violence.
But just violence, period.
It's just violence per se.
Okay.
That comes with no work. Because of all these
strikes.
Strikes. A lot of people, they strike, they don't get money.
They start stealing.
That's where the trouble is starting to get in. Now they steal from each other to stay alive.
Oh, too bad. It's really bad. So where do you feel the resolution is for your country with this? I mean, it sounds to me, just from talking to Chris and Sandy, that there's been quite a bit more upheaval, a nicer term, between the blacks and the whites in the last, say, how has it been, 10 years or so?
The last 4 years, I would say.
4 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that is also either labor unions and also political.
Interesting.
But we getting off the point that we started off with. We're on politics now, where we should have been on the ancients.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. But I think it's very interesting for the rest of the world to know what's really going on here, because we do only get very filtered information, other than, say, Kellinger. There just isn't a whole lot of information coming out of South Africa, for that matter. But the other thing I wanted to ask you was, how do you see this continent playing a role in the ascension process that's going on with the Mother Earth and the globe at this point?
Alexandra, I feel it's going to play a major role. If you take scripture, if you take writings and clay tablets of the Sumerians, they all speak of a new selection or erection of countries and civilization below the rivers of Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
And the rivers of Ethiopia is the rivers Kwito, Kunene, Zambezi, and the Limpopo. Cuts across Africa, all the properties or countries below that has got all the potential in the world in metals and technical stuff and things out of the ground and so that they can work with.
So minerals.
Minerals is the word that I was seeking.
And
yeah.
The incredible waterways here are just beautiful.
Yeah, and not only that, is that if the people are properly led, it can be utopia in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
It can again become breadbasket of the world as it was before 1960.
And Rosie, you
want to? I just want to tell you something else.
Sure.
Whites in South Africa, in one white location, there are more than 700 people living there, impoverished, because they can't get work, nothing.
Mm. Well, it's really gotten very difficult for them because of all the strikes, is what you're saying.
Not only strikes, but to take the soccer tournaments, the World Cup soccer tournaments, they build stadiums that cost billions of rands. Or billions of dollars, if the people can understand or assimilate better to it. You know, something like two or three in every province was built at $2 and $3 billion. It's money that could have been could have gone for upliftment of the poor.
Absolutely.
And it was now just poured down the drain on the World Cup soccer tournament. Because there was no profit made out of that tournament. So in other words, the way I view it is that the silver and the gold of the people has been pawned for soccer ideology.
Yeah, the same is occurring in the United States as well.
Yeah, your big ball, you call it football, we call it rugby.
Yeah.
And some people who watch our rugby says, damn, that many people will kill themselves.
Yeah, I hear that our football is pansy compared to the rugby, even though our football players wear all this padding.
That's what I wanted to say. They wear the paddings and protective armor, whereas the South African or the rest of the world's rugby or rugby football wear no protection.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, you know, the South Africans in general. It seems to me that you're a very enlightened soul, and I would imagine the two of you might have had a little challenge finding others that think as expansively as you do. Is it easy to find other like-minded couples?
Alexandra, that is one of the problems that we have, not only in South Africa, the rest of Africa, the rest of the world. People tend to be blinded by getting up in the morning, taking a shower, scoffing down breakfast, rushing off to work, coming back tonight after work, dish up a meal, go to bed. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what is going on around them. Yeah. The other thing is that additives and stuff in foods and in water and so on affect the brains and the metabolisms of people,
right,
so that they tend to become logistic. They have to get out of that rut and start thinking for themselves.
So how do you recommend people do that?
Read more, listen more, open your eyes and so on for knowledge. Create situations where you form either clubs or friendship groups and so on, discussing various items, irrespective of whether it's politics or sports and so on. Sport must be in life. Politics also must be in life. To take an example, what is a republic? Republic is a wagon. And the people on the wagon was only the ill, very sick, very aged, and then very small. The rest of the population used to draw the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And other politicians came around afterwards like Jacko, running up and down the team who's pulling the wagon. Said, vote for me, vote for me, and then you can ride on the wagon. Now everybody's on the wagon, who's pulling the wagon now?
Ooh, good analysis. Very good.
That's my view of it.
You know, speaking of wagons, I think it's fascinating to share with the audience the commonality of our histories. Now, we were talking about the story. Can you go into that a little bit about the wagons that went north?
Yes, I think that in America, the saying was, during the 17 and 1800s, yeah. Go west, my man, go west. In South Africa, it was go north. And actually, more or less the same time, the countries were settled.
Yeah.
And
fascinating.
If you take the comparisons, I would think it's very close to each other. The basic peoples are very similar to each other.
Yeah.
And the use of knowledge and expertise are very similar. In some instances, you got the Germans that were world leaders in technology. In other instances, you get South Africans that is world leaders in technology. In other instances, it's Americans that is world leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a great common factor that it seems to drive the people to not only prosper, but to excel.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that the two countries' people are very much the same, basically.
Yeah, you're very, very true. Now, would you agree that the continent of Africa has been severely targeted by the cabal?
The whole world is targeted by the cabal.
Do you feel that they've been more so in Africa?
I think so, yes, because they are easier and easier to handle, because the expertise that the typical African has got is not up to standard compared to the cabal. They can't fight and try and block and remedy what the cabal has created.
Hmm. I was going to say that I find the South Africans and the Zimbabweans, if that's the right word, I find the essence here to be so incredibly pure. When I see them, whether they have any kind of individual stuff going on or not, there is an amazing essence about the people here. And, you know, I noticed that some of Sandy and Chris's friends, they walk barefoot. They sing all the time. Apparently, they bathe in the river, which I found fascinating. They don't have sewage. They just bathe in the river. So they're very in touch with the earth. And I was wondering if you think that that's one of the reasons that...
They're very trusting people and they're very childlike.
Yeah, very pure essence about them.
They've got an essence that are typical African. Today is today, tomorrow is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow today is the tomorrow we were worried about yesterday.
Good.
And the main thing is that the leaders amongst them are so into power and into power politics, into wealth, that they tend to forget about their populations that really need it.
Well, what about Mandela? What's the story behind that? What's really going on with that whole thing?
Which one?
Mandela.
Mandela. Straight as I see it, Mandela was, in some people's view, a freedom fighter. But one person's freedom fighter is the other person's terrorist.
Okay.
They killed on Johannesburg Station bombs, Pretoria bomb.
Wow.
They killed something like 48 people in Pretoria. That was in the beginning of the 60s,
okay,
and end of the 50s. And in Johannesburg, it was 146 people killed with bombs and something that he had a finger in the pie of. So he's not as innocent and not the icon that the people think he is.
Do you feel that he brought forth, additional benefits in creating some sort of peace and harmony amongst the blacks and the whites?
Not really, no.
No?
Not really, no. The benefits that the ANC have brought to, or supposedly brought to the country in after they won the referendum and the election, was money that was already secured by the governments previously, English, British, and Afrikaans or the nationalist parties, to use it for upliftment, or should have been used for upliftment of the poor and so on. It never was.
Mm.
It was to enrich the politicians. To take a case in point, our town, local town, when it was taken over by the ANC.
And the ANC is?
African National Congress.
Okay.
That Mandela was part of. But Louis Trichardt was taken over by the ANC. The municipal council had in the bank secured on a savings and long-term investment something like 142 million rand. They had on the deposit scheme that our electrical systems work on. You leave a deposit and you use it during the month, and at the end of the next month, you pay your electric bill and so on. So municipalities are covered by that deposit system for money to be paid over to the suppliers of electricity. They had on the deposit system something like 82 million rand.
Wow.
And is now, what is it, 20 years
mm-hmm.
after Uhuru, that money is gone. They're in debt to 240 million rand. So what does it tell you? It tells me it's mismanagement.
Right. Like all the rest of the country. Yeah.
Well, the rest of the world, actually.
Trillions of dollars of debt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, the system can't stay alive unless we are creating debt at this point.
That's the main thing. Take U.S. of A., for argument's sake. They've got, as you said, several trillion dollars in debt. You can't just create debt, and expect the country to prosper.
Exactly.
The same in South Africa. You can't just give money. There's 6 million taxpayers in South Africa.
Hmm.
6 million taxpayers can't support 50 million non-payers.
Wow.
Physically, it's an impossibility. It has to collapse sometime.
Yeah. And do you feel that that's right around the corner?
It has to be worldwide. The situation, especially in credit and so on, around the whole world, can't be sustained.
Now, that brings me to a good question for you. I noticed that some of the comments that have been made by Sandy and Chris regarding the Chinese, that there has supposedly been some infiltration of Chinese stores, merchandise, things like that. And I myself have read that the Chinese have been much more pursuant of humanitarian causes in various provinces within Africa. Would you agree with that?
Not in total, no. Because, number one, in Zambia, in Malawi, in those places, the Chinese office and also contracted to build railroads. They brought in their own labor, mm-hmm. they brought in their own materials, they brought in their own experience and expertise. They didn't utilize the locals at all.
Too bad.
So what benefit is
it for
that railroad line to the local populace?
That's And why are they building these railroads?
it's difficult to answer that question because on the propaganda side of it, they say it's humanitarian assistance given to African countries.
That's what we've read.
But the main thing is, if you take the scenario where they use their own labor, they import their own labor, and so when, as soon as the project is finished, that labor doesn't go back to China.
Mm.
It stays in that African country for the upkeep of the system.
Interesting.
That's another point. They've taken over the copper exploitation, copper mining, and also the diamond mining system.
Wow!
In Zim.
Are you serious?
And
I did not know that.
They use their own labor. They use Mugabe's troops to keep the other laborers out of that area. And for what purpose? If it was humanitarian purposes that they came in for the first time, as they said they were, why utilize their own labor? Why as soon as the project finished, why don't that labor go back to China?
Right.
It stays in Africa. Is it the same situation that was in the 1700s or 1800s with the Caucasian people colonized Africa? It's now being colonized by Chinese.
Wow.
That's another way of thinking of it.
That's very interesting. Now, is it true that they're building entirely new road systems? I've heard a school system.
That is what I've heard. I can't prove it, but what I've heard, that is one of the scenarios that is created. There is a scenario that is in and out of our newspapers. They want to take over Murfontein. That is a suburb of Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. And they want to create a high-rise situation, something similar to New York. The Chinese. Who are they going to put in there? What are they going to do with their laborers that they brought from China after the project is finished? Are they going to stay in South Africa, or are they going to be moved back to China? So if they stay in South Africa, so what's the benefit to the locals?
Interesting.
To my mind, there was no benefit.
Wow. So I mean, are the Chinese working in particular provinces more than others?
Yes.
And where would that be?
In Gauteng. And in the Free State gold mine regions, I've taken over two mines that I know of in small towns called Kopis.
Wow.
And the other thing is how much between the Chinese and the Arabs, how much of America do they own?
Quite a bit.
So?
Well, you know, a lot of people speculate that the Chinese are almost acting as the saving race of the world. Do you have any opinions on that?
I don't believe that, because there is a highway system that was built from China down towards Iran, Iraq's way, and Syria, a six-lane road that they built stops at the Euphrates River. Why would it stop, begin in the bush and stop at the river? What is the purpose of that road system that they created?
Well, maybe we don't know who prevented them from going further.
Well, if they cross the Euphrates River, they go into other countries.
Of course. Yeah.
So was either stopped by the country's governments?
Yeah.
Or else the cabal?
Yeah.
But if the cabal want to utilize that road system, what for?
Right.
There's always the question mark behind anything that the cabal does.
And you follow the money.
If you want answers, follow the money trail. Yeah.
So is there anything else that you can share with us about just Africa in general, as far as the way in which the country is, I should say, moving ahead, progressing?
Alexandra, let me put it this way. Between my wife and I, we know Africa from Kenya downwards. She was born in Kenya, same as Obama, your state president. He was part, he's part Kenyan, part American. There's also a question mark.
Yes, yes, definitely.
And the other thing is the cabal is losing its grip on the financial situation, but they still persist in trying to implement their ideas. And if they can't implement their ideas financially, they're using the American people and the American government as a battering ram, create wars and so on in areas where they've got nothing to do, or they have nothing to do in that country. The only thing that we can see is either protect the oil reserves, mm-hmm. or else, like in Saddam Hussein's instance, protect the water supply under the desert. They had water supplies there from pipe lines that was more than 6 feet in diameter.
Wow.
So how much water can you transport in a pipeline like that?
Yeah, it always seems to get back to the resources,
back to the natural resources. The people or the people or group who can control the natural resources of the world controls the world.
Yeah, this is very true.
But if you go back even further to Amschel Rothschild's words and so on, he says, give me the right to make and distribute money, and the politicians can do what they want. But he still has them by the short ears if he creates all the money.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So if you want answers, follow the money trail.
Very good point. Well, let's go back a little bit to the antiquity of Africa. And, you know, you and I've had a couple conversations about this. And one of the things I was wondering is, how do you feel that Africa plays a role in this raising of consciousness on the planet? How do you feel that?
I think there's a big issue would be for people to start to realize that Africa was the cradle of man. From Malawi and down towards Cape Point, at Cape Town and so on, they've discovered fossils and so on, proving that the development of the human or the erect ape was created in the southern parts of Africa, what the olden people used to call the Abzu. The Abzu is below the rivers of Ethiopia. Mr. Mike Tillinger had a session in Johannesburg University, or as we call it, Wits University and so on, mm-hmm. had a session there, and he found that over the whole of Africa, or southern Africa, there was stone circles that could create energy.
Yeah.
So they didn't have the necessity to create coal-fired atomic-driven.
Oh, okay. Atomic fusion, right?
Yeah, but systems to create electricity.
Okay.
It seems to be a network of small energy producing items.
Yeah.
And that, to my mind, is what we'll have to go to the future again. Use the earth for what the earth was for.
Yes,
for the benefit of man.
Right.
Not for the benefit of a few, but for the benefit of all mankind.
Very good point. And I know that he's found countless circles.
Yeah.
And they're primarily in what location?
Primarily it was from the southern African area.
Okay.
And I think at a certain stage he's speaks of something like 100,000 or 500,000 circles that they've discovered.
It's incredible.
And they did this whereas the energy level outside of that stone circles was lower than this energy levels inside the stone circles.
Yeah.
You can most probably go back to that type of system.
Kind of makes you wonder why the English were so hell-bent on coming into South Africa to begin with.
You said English.
Yeah.
Right. In that instance, and so on, Cecil John Rhodes and his cronies
mm-hmm.
went after gold and diamonds.
Yeah.
But he had a vision that he wanted Africa to be part of the British Empire from Cape Town right to Cairo.
Wow.
He did it.
Because of all the minerals
of
and all the natural
all
resources.
All the natural resources and so on. That's why Zimbabwe was called, before it was called Zimbabwe, it was called Rhodesia.
Yeah.
Named after Cecil John Rhodes.
Amazing.
So I would think they were just exploiting Africa, raping Africa to be exact.
Haven't they still been doing that?
They've still been doing that. Was through the deep gold mines, coal production and iron ore and all that. But the base metals and stuff were exported.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't enhanced.
Well, they took them out of the country.
They took it out of the country. They did not enhance it in the country or created items for sale and so on in the country and by that create jobs for the masses.
Exactly, exactly.
So I would think that they still got a finger in the pie, but not the general public of Britain or the English or the Europeans, the cabal in those countries. Comes again to follow the money trail.
And you said that there's been an actual major exodus, I thought is what you had told me. A lot of the Brits have left South Africa.
Yes.
Right? And there was a big exodus of the whites, and they left in what year?
From about 1996. Yeah. Even part of my family lives in South Africa. My daughter and her family, husband and kids,
wow.
moved to Australia.
So a lot of people went to Australia. And
Because of criminality. Because of BEE, I don't know whether the Americans will understand BEE, this Black Economic Empowerment.
Okay.
Irrespective of whether they've got the expertise, you have to give them, of those people, you have to give them managerial positions in your companies. And it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Without the proper training and the proper
without
background
the qualifications.
And talent.
Yeah. Without the qualifications. And the expertise, it will never work.
Yeah, that's a good point. So go back a little bit. You were talking about how Africa is the cradle of man or humanity. Tell me a little bit about where that came from. Was that originally coined by Tellinger?
That Africa was the cradle of man?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
No, it was before him, much before him and much before me, and even before Professor Raymond Dart,
okay.
who found the skull of Australopithecus Eric,
yeah, wow.
and
Mrs.
Place, yeah. But since then, they've discovered more and more artifacts and also skeletons and so on. In the lower parts of southern Africa.
So when they discover this, I mean, are there so many parts of Africa that are just not accessible because of the internal tribal conflicts?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of extremes going on in Africa. The excesses cause the expertise to stay out. For case in point, there was a situation that the farmers of South Africa went or could have gone to the northern provinces of Mozambique and restart the economy there, you know, by farming and creating jobs and so on. But before they could get their produce to European markets, they had to rebuild 120 kilometers of rail lines.
Oh.
The governments wouldn't do it. The farmers who wanted to start that project had to do it themselves. So eventually they said, cost factor of that project was too high, and it was true.
It still feels low. Like, what exactly are they trying to prevent this continent from discovering? You know, what do you feel? If this is the cradle of humanity, and clearly since I've been here, I've been blown away by some of the ruins and even some of the hieroglyphics and things like that that I've seen. What is it? What is it that causes them so much to continue to keep on raping Africa? You know, you're talking about diamonds and copper and gold and things like that. Well, not America, excuse me, Africa. But, I mean, what is it about this continent, this country?
The whole continent is very rich in minerals. There is some minerals that I've only read about. I haven't ever seen it. People have discovered it in various places in Africa. But I think that at this stage, the concentration of the cabal is in Europe, mm-hmm. where they want to create the old Roman Empire again. Mm-hmm. And
They're not succeeding.
Not at this stage, no, but I don't think they will succeed because of the differences in nationalities and peoples.
Right. Well, and I think people are waking up to the government and realizing that they're not for the people, obviously.
That's correct. And the nationalistic tendencies amongst the peoples of Europe and so on is beginning to surface at a very fast rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
People adhering to people of their own kind.
Yeah.
And that is what is going on at this stage. But take South Africa for the gold mines in South Africa, or recently in the platinum mines, where the strikes was at its high point.
Mm-hmm.
The gold mines are ever going deeper and deeper and following the gold veins. It's becoming more and more expensive to bring it up, or to exploit it.
Yeah.
The same with the platinum. Mm-hmm. Who controls the prices of platinum and gold?
Yeah.
Follow the money trail again.
Exactly.
Because in my way of looking at economics is that if a thing becomes scarce, the price would go up.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true.
But with the strikes that they had in the platinum mines in Southern Africa, the market was a shortage on the market of platinum, and yet the price came down.
Mm. What do you
think? So who's manipulating the price?
And what do you think that's reflecting?
I think it's reflecting that the cabal is interfering with local produce.
Correct. So back to what you said. Now, if my memory is correct, I remember reading an article about Afghanistan, and one of the main things they were going in there for was not platinum, but something else. And it had to do with off-world sort of minerals. And I'm wondering if that same thing applies to South Africa.
You mean Star Wars type of minerals?
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
And I bet it would be here because the soil here just blows me away. I mean, it's so rich.
It's so rich, red.
And your produce is so huge compared to what I see.
But if you want to take over a country, what is the cheapest way?
You go in and you take over the...
No, you can't. War is expensive.
Water, well...
Buy, you know, war is very expensive. Buy the politicians.
Well, yeah. That's
my view.
Yeah.
If you can buy the country's politicians, you can and put a banana republic on.
Mm-hmm.
You can control the prices of all the minerals and stuff that you want.
Right, right.
That's one way of looking at it, my way of looking at it.
If you were to give me a synopsis of all of the, you know, you just said approximately 76 provinces in Africa.
No, it's not provinces, countries.
Countries, okay. Would you Are there any in particular that are really in a bad place right now? You know,
bad situation, like the internet.
Right.
It was created by America, and it's what Charles Taylor did mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on. And yet it's rich in gold, and it's rich in diamonds, and it's rich in minerals, Liberia, and the Central Republic of the Congo.
Yeah.
It's also rich in copper, and rich in gold, and rich in other minerals.
So are they keeping these conflicts going, do you think, in order to still control those resources?
Well, not only control the resources, but keeping it in reserve.
Yeah. Exactly.
See, if they can control the world prices on it and keep the other minerals and so on in reserve, and when there is really a shortage, then chuck it on the market at a bigger price, bigger profit.
Right. In fact,
it goes back to the scenario of following the money trail.
Right. The Zimbabwean tour guide that went with us up to the ruins, he mentioned that there are parts of Zimbabwe where all you have to do is go down a certain street and you'll see diamonds.
That is an exaggeration. It's a similar exaggeration to Johannesburg, the city of gold.
Mm.
There were rumors that the streets were lined with gold and all that, but no, it's just an exaggeration. But that there is plenty of diamonds in Zimbabwe is true.
And he said they've actually placed military personnel with guns in these locations, so you can't just walk in those areas and pick up diamonds.
It's a very big possibility that it's so, because if you take Namibia, also Southwest Africa, the Sperrgebiet, it's called in German Sperrgebiet. It's an area that's off limits to the general public.
Mm.
There they mine diamonds, not with dynamite and pick and shovel, with vacuum cleaners.
Oh my God, are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh my God.
But it's not a vacuum cleaner like you have in your home. It's a big dredger boat. Works on the same principle as a vacuum cleaner. They dredge the sand and stuff amongst the rocks in the surf, and they pick out and exploit, or not exploit, but get the diamonds out of the sand.
That is amazing.
Not very many people know about
that. That's why I'm interviewing you.
And the other thing is that in the German times, it was just very rich town also in that spare area, in the cordoned off area. It's called Kolmanskop. Mm-hmm. It's a ghost town now. Even the steam engines that they used to produce electricity in the 1900s, or 1901, 1900, up to 1910, I think, still there, but it's under sand.
Interesting.
The desert claimed back to its own.
Wow. That's crazy. Now, I was going to ask you, getting back to the gold mines, is it true they are, supposedly rumors have it that the gold miners are starting to strike not only because of wage disputes, but because it's getting so hot, they're having to go further and further into Mother Earth.
And you're getting closer to hell.
And the heat, they said the heat is outrageous.
It is.
And so I was wondering what you thought about that.
No, my brother was a mine captain for gold mines. And according to him also, it's terribly hot down there. And the deeper you go, the less ventilation you have. You have to create artificial ventilation to keep the temperatures and so on constant so that you can work on a productive rate. But as I said earlier also, is that due to the depth of the mines.
And how deep are they going?
It's going over 4 kilometers down already.
Wow.
It's 1.5 miles.
Wow.
You can imagine if it's so deep that what the cost will be to reclaim or get the gold out. We'll come to a stage that it's not viable anymore, yeah. Financially viable.
Well, have they shut down some of these mines? Because that's been the local discussion amongst some of the financial sites.
Yeah, some of the shafts has been shut down.
Okay.
I haven't got the names of the mines on my fingertips. But then again, you get another scenario like the scenario of Mandela's grandson, and Zuma's grandson, buying the one mine and just selling off all the valuable stuff and so on and closing mine down. 17,000 people without jobs, just there.
Oh, right. Well, so what is your perception on the Zimbabwe ruins? We just completed a mission up there, Chris, Sandy, and myself. I was wondering if you could give me a little bit of background on what you know of it.
I don't know much about the Zimbabwean ruins, but only what I can deduce from my own basic knowledge and so on, that Zimbabwean ruins was the base of Enki from the Anunnaki.
Yes.
And that was built after the flood. That's why it was built quickly. They had to build it quickly and so on. So it's not built with expertise that a star or a planet hopping community would have better equipment and better knowledge and so on to build a better place.
Yeah. It's certainly not like the pyramids of Giza or anything, you know.
Yeah.
But still, it's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive. But if you go in there, I've been there many years ago, you get the feeling that on a psychic level, I don't know whether it's because of the many people who died in creating the mines and so on around Zimbabwe. I mean, when I say Zimbabwe, I mean Zimbabwean ruins. That they used black miners and so on to crawl into the tunnels and so on to exploit the mines. But then you get the orbs and so on that the person can see and sometimes can photograph, and they appear on the photos of the energies of the deceased peoples.
Mm-hmm.
But that it was one of the experimental stations of the Abzu by Enki and his sister, Nur Shah, I think it was her name.
Yeah.
And they created the Mumu, the primitive worker, because the Anunnaki and the laws of that time didn't want to do manual labor anymore. So they had to create a slave.
Right, right.
And man, at that stage, was created as a worker, a primitive worker.
Now, you said something about how you were surprised at this being the base of Enki, but why didn't he build something bigger, grander, better? Can you expound upon that?
I think before the floods, the scripture and all the other information Sumerians, Akkadians speak about, there must have been better facilities than the current Zimbabwean ruins, because to do medical experiments in creating the Mumu, the Lulu. The Mumu was a spaceship.
Yeah.
If you take our bigger hospitals and training hospitals and so on, equipments and equipment available to them, mm-hmm. was to be in a secure environment and clean environment and so on, and you visited Zimbabwean ruins yourself.
Yeah.
If you look at the ruins itself, where was the medical facilities? I can't seem to remember anything there. Although it could have been removed. Same as the argument that when I study some of the clay tablets of Schumer, the people ask me if they were so far for progress, where is the computer paper and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But after 6,000 years, where would paper be? It's a stupid argument in my opinion. And but that it is definitely the Abzu history speaks of. The lower portion of southern Africa was what they called the Abzu. The place down under.
I'm just thinking the great enclosure where we did the ceremony was, you could tell that there were separate rooms within the enclosure. The walls were very high, but you kind of got the feeling that this was, they said that it was the headquarters of the Queen in particular, and they said that the actual rituals and spiritual practices were done in the hill complex.
That's correct, yes.
And then they had the Shona village, you know, which is where they actually lived and, you know, carried on their life. But I don't know if there was any kind of medical facility. I didn't see anything like that. I did, however, discuss with Sandy and Chris how interesting it was that we were led to the area where the conical towers were. And there were three of them in that enclosure.
That's correct. Two of them is not as well preserved as the one. The one where when you immediately enter the complex, it's the one that's best preserved. But that takes me to a place in Europe called Baalbek.
Oh.
If they had the expertise to lift and stack 1,200-ton rocks,
mm-hmm.
one block of rock is 1,200 tons. Even today, we haven't got the engineering ability to move that rock.
Right.
They could do it there. In the absolute, there should have been a better appointed or designed medical center.
Well, I often...
Or palace or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I often question just history overall because I wonder to myself, after watching a couple of different videos, have we not been misled even in that area where there aren't as many historical timelines, that they were just, what should I say, they were just kind of layered on one another, with the same people being discussed, presented, and being used as the educational basis for children, etc., through each timeline.
It can be, because if you take it for argument's sake, the Sumerians, the Akkadians, the Chaldeans, and those tribes and peoples of peninsula in just above Africa, what is now the West Arabian Peninsula, I think. If you take that into consideration, you find that one city was built on top of another, and afterwards it formed a great big mound. When the archaeologists come and they start digging, they cover the first layer and they say, this is from the Sumerian time. And they carry it on and say, this is from the Akkadian kind of time and so on, and yet where they go down until they reach the layer of sand. When they reach the layer of sand, they queried, well, why would there be sand so deep?
Mm-hmm.
It was put down there by the flood.
Right. And why did they build on top again and again and again that specific area?
Yeah, to stay in that area because spiritually it drew them there.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And secondly, it formed a solid base, and they used some of the rubble of the previous buildings and so on as material to build a new city on, the new system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is true. So
to take a point in question also, South African history of the great trek, the big trek, the moving out of the Boer, before the Anglo-Boer War, after the suppression of the Boers in British times, of the Cape Province and the surrounding area. If you take Louis Trichardt, you see the mountains to the north of us, mm-hmm. where we are now, mm-hmm. those 90-degree cliffs and so on. You say, yes. Another Boers moved across that cliffs.
Wow.
That's nonsense, they didn't.
I was going to say.
They were maybe would have been illiterate, but they weren't stupid. They trekked around the mountain.
Yeah.
The tracks are still there today around the mountain, past the salt pans. This is just fancy stories that they trekked over a cliff and lowered the wagons with ropes and all that.
Well,
that is nonsense. They sent out scouts 4, 5, 6 weeks ahead to find the best route.
That makes more sense.
I think it would have been the same with the trek in years of
going eight. From east to west.
From east to west.
Yeah.
When they hit the Rockies, they found passes to go through. They didn't just go over the Rockies.
Yeah. And even then, lots of lives lost.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Well, now, is there anything else that you could share with us? You know, a lot of people look to Africa and perceive it as this very, you know, the spiritual practices of these various tribes, and the fact that there is such a rootedness to Mother Earth. There's almost kind of like a hope that Africa can come alive and show the rest of the world. And I'm just wondering, you say it's the cradle of humanity.
To take it as a general idea, the whole of the population of Africa tends to be followers and not leaders. If you take one of their shamans and holy men and so on, Credo Mutwa, mm-hmm. is his name.
I was going to bring him up. Yes.
He said in an interview that in the history of his people, and he speaks for the Zulu. I don't know whether you've seen the film made out of it, calling Chaka Zulu.
I don't think I've seen that.
Where he cleaned out the subcontinent. As there was nobody left here when the Dutch people landed in the Cape Province in 1652. There was no other tribes except for a handful of Khoi people. The nearest people that black people that they found was in Zululand, and then here in Venda.
You're serious.
The rest of the continent or subcontinent was clean. They found mounds of bones of people being killed. So Chaka Zulu cleaned out the whole country. And in any case, to bring us back to the scenario of they being not leaders, you get the exceptional ones that is exceptionally bright. But the majority of the populace of Africa tends to be followers and not leaders. If you take the history of Europe for the last 2,000 or 3,000 years. You take all the things that have been developed by the Caucasian people, big buildings, big discoveries, mm-hmm. and also the weaving bobbin, sewing machines, and all that. And yet in Africa, they had the country there from below of, you could call it Ethiopia, from Ethiopia down to Cape Town. They had that, the country there for the same period. They couldn't even invent a wheel. They used to cut down a tree, use the tree fork as a sledge, hook it behind one of their cattle, and move their stuff on the sledge.
It just feels so deliberate to me.
It feels so, but the main thing is people tend to ascribe higher ideologies and so on for various peoples. If you take the comic films that is produced in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
what do they project as the king of the animals? A lion.
Right.
It's not. Hippo is the king of the animals.
The hippopotamus.
Go to scripture, go to Sumerian tablets and so on. It's stated there. You, Hippo, you are the king of the beasts.
Interesting.
The same as those comics ascribe human ideas and mannerisms and so on to animals.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Archetypes.
Yeah, but it's not so.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's that one film? It's so popular.
The thing I always think of is Tarzan and Jane, you know.
No. The thing is, the one,
The
Lion King.
Yeah.
If you take that film in perspective, they ascribe human mannerisms to all of the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the animals are, as a rule, instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
They kill a cow to eat the cow.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go and kill 10 or 20 cows for future use.
Yeah, this is true.
And that is why if the integration, not integration, but samenwerking.
Cooperation.
Yeah, if cooperation can be done between the Caucasian people and the Negroid people. If they can organize cooperation between the masses, then it can be a wonderful country.
Yeah.
It can be the world leader and the breadbasket of the world in the future.
It's like the diamond in the rough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's such a gorgeous country.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed it.
They've been neglected in training. So to bring them up to standard will take several years or several generations, I would think.
Yeah, I was going to say more than several years.
Yeah, several generations. But getting back to Credo Mutua, he said the people who ruled Southern Africa were tall, blue-eyed, white-haired men.
Hmm.
Who they were? Anunnaki? I don't know.
Interesting.
But it's not out of my mouth, that's out of Credo Mutua, one of their witch doctors.
Right.
He wrote a scenario about that. And it's on black and white that he said it.
Very interesting. Well, we're coming to the end of the interview, and I just wanted to thank you for your time and your wisdom and your willingness to share your perspective is such a lovely country. I'm honored to be here and be with Sandy and Chris, and just being able to experience this, like, you know, where I'm really in your home. I'm listening to your conversations. I'm not just on a tour bus driving by and taking a picture kind of thing.
Mm.
It's really been an enlightening experience for me. So with that said, I would ask you to just maybe finalize what you feel is the most important thing for anybody listening to this interview, as far as where do we go from here?
Alexandra, thank you. You were a very, very expert interviewer, leading me into some situations that I really didn't want to answer. But getting to the final say in this interview is that we have to rely on our expertise, our good willingness, our cooperation between nations, and then I would think the Palladians, they are very pro-human.
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention the others, say they tend to draw energy if you mention it. I think you know who I'm speaking
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
But with that and with the sincerity and love and perspective of the general populace of the as we can succeed.
Yes. And I do feel we are. I do feel we are. Every little bit that each of us contribute makes all the difference.
I think so. And the other thing is that the more and more the people's eyes are opened, even the central third eye, that they can see into situations, mm-hmm. and be on the lookout for situations where they can benefit his brethren.
Yes.
We will be better off.
Yes, yes. How beautifully stated. Thank you for that. Okay. Well, gosh, I wish I could interview you for hours because I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I always enjoy meeting up with you anyway. But we will take this further, possibly next week, and maybe have another interview about more regarding South Africa. So anyone that's interested in hearing about Sandy and Chris's and my mission, please feel free to check the BBS Radio tab on the site. And there's a whole slew of interviews there. The one regarding the Zimbabwe ruins, Sandy's done just a phenomenal job. She just finished with adding a lot of the pictures that we had taken. So please feel free to check out that. And I just want to thank my audience, as always. You are awesome. I love you all. And stay tuned, and we will talk to you again next week. Same time, same place, same channel. Take care. Thanks. Bye.